This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027.
Well, today we saw Economic Development Minister Ibrahim Patel briefing the media on the Competition Amendment Bill, which is going to give more teeth to the existing Competition Act. Cabinet earlier in July approved the submission of the proposed legislation to Parliament, and it said the amendments would mitigate against high levels of economic concentration, limited transformation and abuse of market power by what it called dominant firms. It's been 20 years since the late former President Nelson Mandela signed the Competition Act into law, and to find out how this change is going to impact all business in the country, I'm joined by an august panel tonight, starting off with Economic Planning Minister Ibrahim Patel. Minister, thanks for joining us.
Good evening, Michael. I hope you are well, and good evening to all of your listeners.
Thank you very much. I am well, and I also hope that you too, Professor Raymond Parsons of the Northwest University School of Business and Governance, are well.
Yes, thank you, and good evening to you and to the listeners.
And in studio, we've got Heather Irvine, Director of Falcon and Hume Attorneys. Heather, great to see you again.
Hi there, Michael.
And also on the line, it looks like we've got Morberger Smith, Director at Worksman's Advisory Services. Amor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, Minister, kick us off here. With respects to one of the big changes that has been introduced in this revised draft, the national security issue that has been introduced by the new draft is interesting in so much as the explanatory memo to the December 2017 draft noted that you, as the minister, had considered this centralization of the merger decision-making process in the executive by providing the responsible minister with the right to review any merger decision on specified grounds. But you did note that there were a number of problems with this approach, including the fact that a dual system would create high levels of uncertainty and had the possibility of causing delays. So what has changed between then and now?
Well, thank you very much, Michael. Just before I answer your question, if you don't mind, can I say hello to all the panelists? And in particular, tell you that you've chosen well. I don't know the third panelist, but Heather was the instructing attorney in one of the seminal competition matters, the Walmart matter, and did an absolutely fantastic job. And Raymond Parsons, of course, is one of the people who've been a leading representative of the business community in social dialogue. So I'm really looking forward to the conversation with them. Well, let me come back to your question and contextualize it a little bit, Michael, that what we released today is a detailed bill, which I hope over the next hour or so we can talk about, which has a number of provisions dealing with essentially how to promote economic inclusion. One of the provisions in the bill is what we call, as a shorthand term, a national security veto. And what that veto applied to are instances where a foreign acquiring firm buys a South African firm in sectors where national security interests may apply. And in those, and we can talk through the modalities in a moment, in those instances, the firm would need to go through a special process in which, if you like, a national security vetting or evaluation takes place. All of that has to be completed within 60 days. And if the evaluation finds that there are no negative impact on national security, then the merger is dealt with in the normal way. If indeed it finds that there are challenges, it can either prohibit the merger or it can approve the merger with conditions. But then the merger must still go through the normal competition process. Now, I make that point because in December last year, when we published the Competition Amendment Bill 2017, call it Mark 1 of the process of revising our law, we had grappled with a very different proposition and idea. And what we grappled with and what the explanatory memorandum of last year's bill referred to was whether we should grant the executive a broad override, the ability essentially to veto a merger based on general public interest considerations. And having reflected carefully on that position last year, we concluded it's not appropriate, that the architecture of our act as it stands now with a few small tweaks is appropriate, namely that a merger is evaluated by the competition authorities on two grounds. The first ground is its impact on competition, and the second ground is its impact on public interest issues. And we like that range. And we've tweaked it a little bit. We've clarified the right of the executive on things like access to information and rights of appeal. But generally, we want that system to continue. In the course of the discussions over the last few months, it became abundantly clear that one of the gaps in our law that we needed to address is that there is no provision in our law to deal with national security. Unlike countries like Canada, Australia, the United States, the European Union itself as a bloc, China and others, where they have provisions like that, we have no provision. So all the Act seeks to do is address, or the bill seeks to do, is only address that gap. It's a fairly confined and specific amendment. And later as we talk, I'm going to share with you, Michael, if you're interested, the source of it, where we've drawn some of it. And you'll see that it's fairly standard. It's the kind of stuff when an investor sits in New York or in Brussels or in Beijing or Shanghai, they would be familiar with those kind of provisions. In fact, the very language in our bill they would be familiar with. And they would say that by the standards of what they've seen elsewhere in the world, it's rather mainstream, and in fact more constrained and more carefully crafted than the legal provisions elsewhere. Let me give an example to conclude. If a foreign acquiring firm wanted to buy something like an armaments factory that may be situated in South Africa, then we have no legal provision that would enable us in the merger process to consider that. There's a number of sectors like that. So the bill essentially says it's only in those sectors that the president has designated by notice in the Gazette where there would be a requirement to approach a committee set up by the president and composed of members of cabinet and other public officials. I hope that contextualized last year the issue of an executive override in the merger, sure. And this year, which is simply addressing a gap in the law that when there are national security considerations, we have no basis anywhere to deal with it.
It's certainly
competition and public issues, those. The architecture of the Act remains intact.
Absolutely. It certainly does to a degree, Minister. And I think, Heather, I'd like to hand over to you now. Just from that perspective, as the Minister says, it's written in sort of the lingua franca of competition law authorities all over the world when it comes to national interest. Can you think of a single transaction in the last 5 years, and you've worked on the big ones, the Walmarts, that have raised any real national security issues which couldn't be adequately dealt with by the Commission exercising its power to consider public interest factors?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, Michael. I think colloquially we think of national interest as relating to something strategic in the country, like a defense asset or maybe telecommunications assets or broadcasting companies, and a little bit narrower than what one would think of in the public interest context, which ranges all the way from employment to a vulnerable sector of the economy. So I think there's got to be a distinction. I think public interest is very broad and potentially includes something like a national interest. But it's quite true that there are internationally provisions which allow various governments in the places that the minister has mentioned to decide whether or not they're going to permit a foreign firm which comes in and wants to control a strategic business to actually execute that transaction. I think the concern about this amendment is that that national interest is not very clearly defined, and it's also not really clear who a foreign acquiring firm is. So it's not limited to control, which is a concept that the Act does confine. It's kind of any firm that has a presence offshore, essentially. And the national security interests are not limited to something related to, quite clearly, to something like defense. They're very, very broadly described to relate to something which could be anything that's important to purchasers in South Africa, whether they're individuals or government. So my concern is that foreign acquirers or potential foreign acquirers are going to have some difficulty understanding whether they are required to notify their transactions or not. But this is something which I think can be addressed through the parliamentary drafting process.
And one can understand the concern from a national security perspective to, say, for example, hand control over a strategic power asset to a foreign firm or a foreign entity that then has undue exercise and influence over one of the key inputs in your economy. That said, Raymond, I'd like to bring you in here. There was no such provision in the draft provided for public comment late last year. So it would be fair to say that business, especially foreign acquiring firms who are the targets of this law, haven't really had an adequate opportunity to comment on the introduction of this restriction on investments in South African businesses.
Well, I think, Michael, perhaps I could start with, if I could talk about the big picture because of the time factor. I think, as the Minister spoke earlier about inclusive approach, and inclusive capitalism, indeed, was the theme which we heard from former President Obama today. And I think that's really the overarching goal of what we're trying to achieve here, about addressing the big concentration in our economy and opening up more opportunities. But what I like about the timing is that, apart from the fact that we now have a draft bill that will need to be discussed intensively and debated in Parliament, and I hope that all the interest groups who have an interest in this will make their inputs as they've done before. It's interesting that more or less in the next few days, we are also going to get a document from the presidency on how we are going to raise this $100 billion of investment over the next 5 years. And the two run in tandem, because what we want to do is to say this legislation is wanting to open up new opportunities, but we don't want it to create more uncertainty. We want to see how are we going to raise this investment-friendly environment, and how does competition policy and law fit into this. So I think, once again, someone said recently, entrepreneurs are the stormtroopers of the private sector. And the question is, does this legislation open up more opportunities for these stormtroopers to be able to enhance competition and indeed promote the investment and the job creation that we want? So I think as we move into this debate, there are some of these tests we will have to apply. Not only whether we are going in for the best, you know, the best global practice, but are we going in for the best global practice in those economies with whom we compete? And I think that's quite important. And I think that's one of the refinements which we might apply as we move down the road of this debate. And then, for example, I think it would be interesting, and it would enrich the debate, and perhaps the minister could answer this question. There was a socioeconomic impact assessment made of this legislation. Is that available? Would it be available to those stakeholders who will be making further inputs? And then also, on a very minor point, but I see that in clause 13, where the ministerial committee needs to report on a foreign merger, and indeed, when you talk about the security interests, and has to submit that report to Parliament, will there be a time period that it has to be done within a certain period? Because I think that's quite important when we come back to the issue of accountability, whether it's competition policy or elsewhere. It's very important that we get the maximum transparency and information. So I think the big issues now, we need to ensure that this legislation will, in fact, enhance our ability to attract investment, to be able to boost investment, that it is part of the solution and not in some unintended way a part of the problem. And so that's, I think, that's the important next stage that we have reached in assessing the specific clauses of this legislation, and where some of the technical aspects may trip us up. And I think if we can continue with an open debate, and I think this debate has been very useful, and I think we need to take it to the next level as we move into the parliamentary stage, so that we get the inclusive capitalism that both Obama, the minister, and if I may say so, in my recent book, we pleaded for.
Minister Patel, I think a few questions in the comments from Heather and Professor Parsons there. Let's start on the definitions, of national security and also of the definition of foreign acquiring firms. Are they perhaps in the national security space a little bit too broad? And have we narrowed down exactly what a foreign acquiring firm is? Is that adequate?
So let me say, I don't have a book that I can punt, but I'm sure that there's a bowl that I can punt, brought lately to you from the South African government. But on a more serious note, I think let me start with the issue that Heather raises, and that is, are we precise enough in our formulation? And I think it's important because we need to make sure that we don't, in fact, catch more than we seek to catch. So what we've done in the bill, we've provided for a few things. The first thing we've done is we've said the kind of transactions that requires notification are the same transactions that currently require notification in 13A1 of the Competition Act. So if it is a transaction essentially that is so small that it would not normally require notification, or where there's no change of control, then it would fall outside of the ambit of 18A of the bill. And then we've done something else. Something I think interestingly different to some of the foreign jurisdictions we've looked at. We've identified with a greater degree of precision the kind of national security considerations that the president is obliged to take into account when he gazettes the sectors that are affected. And we've set those out in the bill, and there's about eight or so of those factors. Let me run through them very quickly. The first one is the impact of a merger transaction on the Republic's defense capabilities and interests. The second one is on the use or transfer of sensitive technology outside the Republic. The third is the security of infrastructure that's essential to the health, safety, security, or economic well-being of citizens and the effective functioning of government. Then there's the supply of important goods or services to citizens or government. There's provision where a merger's impact on enabling foreign surveillance or espionage could be taken into account. The Republic's international interests. The facilitation of the activities of illicit actors such as terrorists or organized crime. And finally, the economic and social stability of the Republic. Now contrast that with the United States dispensation, where essentially you have a codified list, and by the way, some of them mirror exactly the South African example, but in addition to that, there's also a quite open-ended entitlement to the U.S. President. In the United States legislation, by the way, they have a committee called CFIUS. It's the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which has fairly wide-ranging powers to consider these things. And then the American president has a veto power. And in their legal framework, they provide to the American president not only a defined set of criteria, but also it indicates any other factor that the president may regard as appropriate. we're constraining the exercise of the national security mandate. And by the way, I should make this point. In the South African Constitution, and I think all of us on the talk show are constitutionalists. We all believe in the value of the Constitution. In the Constitution, responsibility for national security lies with the executive and parliament. Parliament, obviously, in the sense of passing laws, the executive in utilizing the provisions of a law to carry out its constitutional mandate. Currently, there is no such provision. Unless you provide that, you're unable to carry out your constitutional duty. That brings me to the next part of it, which is the definition of whether we've provided sufficiently for defining what is a foreign acquiring firm. I do think we have, but I mean we'd be interested in any other comments that observers may have. So we've provided in the bill specifically a definition of what is a foreign acquiring firm, and so I think essentially what we're seeking to do is to say deal with the matter, but make it as precise as you can.
Mm.
Canada, for example, has a provision that enables essentially the Minister of Economic Development, my counterpart, or the Minister of Public Safety, to trigger an investigation in a foreign acquiring firm. And they have quite a wide range of criteria, much wider than ours. I recall, if my memory serves me now, that in the case of Canada, it includes the cultural integrities, cultural rights of Canadians. In the case of Australia, it goes, again, much wider than what we've crafted it. And I've referred to the American thing. Raymond Parsons makes an interesting point, and the point that I'd like to reflect on. And he says, when we compare with those that we compete against, rather than those that may be in a space beyond our level of economic development, or the ones that we directly compete for investment. And it's my impression that if one looks at a number of countries with whom South Africa competes, they may not have anything close to our rule of law arrangements in place and our constitutional setup. So if governments in many of those places are unhappy with a merger, I think all they'll do is indicate that they're not in agreement with the merger, and that's pretty much the end of the road for such a merger. Our system is different. Our system is based not only on a constitutional dispensation, but also on the recognition of the independence of the competition authorities. And therefore, if you don't have a legal provision that enables you to deal with the matter, you can't deal with the matter. It's as simple as that in a South African context. Now, how would a foreign investor look at this? Foreign investors are generally smart people. They recognize governments must run countries, and they want to see that governments deal with matters in a way that's predictable, that there's certainty, there's clarity. Capital doesn't like uncertainty. They can factor in the cost of something if there's certainty. Where we don't have any legal provision in place, and where a contemplated merger may affect the national security interests of the Republic, they know that countries, including South Africa, I guess, are not able to look the other way when it comes to national security. And so we've had in the private security industry a long-running and still not completely resolved issue around foreign ownership. What one must avoid is that gaps in the law lead investors to conclude that legislation may be passed after the event, that there would be an attempt to apply that legislation retrospectively, because that kind of thing creates uncertainty. Better to have a dispensation in place, one that borrows from established practice that is certain, that is clear, where the law indicates it doesn't give the executive unfettered powers. It binds that power to a specified criteria. And I think when you look at our criteria, while of course any bill can be improved, I think there'd be a broad sense that they're the mainstream of what is happening elsewhere.
Thank you very much, Minister. Sorry, as we reach the end of our time, unfortunately we don't have an hour, we only had half an hour. I would just like to get concluding comments from Heather and Raymond. Heather, the one issue, and we talk about certainty as the Minister said, but capital wants certainty. It wants to know what the rules of the game are and also doesn't want the goalposts to be shifted after the fact. But how does one identify, for example, an effective place of management, as it says in the bill, which is not a concept either in the Competition Act or the Companies Act by definition? So there is some vagueness there.
No, I think that's true, and I think the Minister's quite right. It can be addressed by some careful drafting, and I think making use of the definition of control that already sits in the Competition Act is probably the way to do that. The other key issue, Michael, is process. I think ideally these processes between the committee and the commission should run concurrently, so you should be able to put your filing in at exactly the same time, and ideally we should allow foreign firms to use exactly the same filing documents. And then I think there should be some coordination between the commission and the committee. I think the committee would benefit from the commission's analysis of both competition and public interest when considering broadly whether or not a transaction poses a risk to national security, and that's certainly the way that it works, for example, in Canada. There's a weighing up of whether a transaction is or is not generally in the public interest of Canada. And as far as I'm aware, there are only three transactions that have really been prohibited, whereas there's about 1,700 that have been notified, and only transactions in very, very narrow areas actually attract a high level of scrutiny. It's otherwise really just a mechanical notification procedure that goes on. So if we can get the timing right and we can get the coordination between the competition authorities and this new committee right, then I think one can make it workable and we can keep our status as a very attractive foreign investment destination.
As we know, we've already raised commitments of $20 billion from the President's first investor roadshow. Raymond, your concluding thoughts?
Well, let me say this. I think the Minister has rightly pointed out all the pitfalls we need to avoid in order to make a success of the new competition legislation. I would say what we also need to avoid is that we fail to raise the $100 billion over the next 5 years, which we need to break out of our current low-growth trap. And I think these two need to be synchronized, as they can be, and I think we can build confidence in opening up new opportunities for investment, and that is the reality test that we need to apply to the combination of our policies to get this economy onto a higher growth path with more job creation and less poverty.
Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. Thanks to Minister of Economic Development, Ibrahim Patel, Professor Raymond Parsons, a very well-known economist and author, and Heather Irvine, Director of Falcon & Heuming Attorneys.